This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Largely lost in the shuffle of who is imposing which tariffs on whom, because come on, they've been flying back and forth pretty willy-nilly the past 4 or 5 months, has been this fact. The president's steel and aluminum duties were aimed at strategic rivals, yes, like China, also allies, Mexico, Canada, and the European Union, but at least they got deferments on those tariffs for a month. But Japanese steel imports to the United States, a lot of it highly specialized, have been subjected to a 25% tariff from the very beginning. And that is not helping at all, as the world's second largest steel producer, which Japan is trying to find its way through long-term economic change. Adrian Ma went to see how that is playing out, where Japanese steel was born.
Japan's first modern blast furnace was built in 1857 in a city called Kamaishi. And the best way to get there is on the steel tracks of a passenger train. From Tokyo, it's a 6-hour ride up into the mountains, then down towards the coast. When you get off at Kamaishi Station, the first thing you see walking out is a giant green manufacturing plant. On the side, it says Nippon Steel in big black letters.
Watch out, if you both your hands are held up, make sure you don't trip and fall.
That's plant manager Masaki Hino speaking through a translator. He didn't really want to talk about tariffs, but he was pretty eager to show me how automated the plant is. Today, about 300 people work there. But back in the 60s, the number of employees was almost 30 times that. As I learned watching an animated film in the city's Iron and Steel Museum, the industry once employed about 10% of the population. In Japan, they call company towns like this castle towns. Ikumi Kawahata is a local historian.
When I was growing up in elementary school, I was living right by the plant, so I could see all the chimneys.
Life was good. The city was bustling. And sure, there was a bit of air pollution. But if you wanted to get clean, you could always go to the public baths, operated by Nippon Steel. But then, in the 1980s, the company restructured, moving many of its operations away from Kamaishi. Kawahata remembers watching as the chimneys from the old blast furnaces were torn down.
It made me feel sad because I thought, we're no longer the city of steel.
In the years that followed, Kamaishi lost about two-thirds of its population. And Hisetada Maruki, who heads up the nonprofit Kamaishi Social Welfare Council, says the city lost a big piece of its identity.
When they left, that was the first time I realized that we didn't create the city. Nippon Steel created it.
He says Kamaishi has tried to forge a new identity around industries like seafood processing and machine parts. But then in 2011, Kamaishi suffered a major setback. A magnitude 9 earthquake caused a tsunami to rip through the city. Today, there is still a lot of rebuilding happening, but most of downtown has been revived. New apartments and a new shopping mall sit on land that used to be occupied by Nippon Steel. On the surface, things are looking up. But at a fish market down the road, Eiko Murakami says she's anxious about the future.
Everything looks brand new and well-constructed, but that's just the outward appearance.
The city's declining population means fewer customers, she says. And that probably won't change unless more young people decide to stay. At a nearby community center, 16-year-old Ino Hasagawa and her friends are just finishing up a dance class. She says it's comfortable here. You can live a normal life.
Do you think you'll stick around?
I would definitely have to leave for my education, because there's no college here.
But after that, Hasagawa says, she doesn't know. One of the great things about this town, she says, is that even as it changes, the people stay the same. She's just not sure she'll be one of them. In Kamaishi, I'm Adrian Ma for Marketplace.